On this edition of Retronauts, you say Jaquio, I say Jaquio. Let's call the whole thing off. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Retronauts. I'm Ray Barnholt, and yes, it's my turn. How about that? And we only have the core crew here today, but with me is Bob Mackey.
Hi, everybody.
And Jeremy Parrish.
Hola, amigos.
And we're going to talk about some fun stuff a little bit in the show, but I guess let's go ahead and do our usual spiel about Virtual Console, even though, you know, with the way we're doing the scheduled recording stuff, this... You'll probably be hearing this sometime in 2014.
What was that last month?
It's kind of retro, in that sense. Keeping the theme.
Remember July?
We had a great time.
Yeah, but as we record this on July 6th, there's more Game Gear stuff that came out in the last week.
It's got to be the last of the Game Gear stuff. I can't imagine there's much else that Sega's going to dredge up. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
Did they port Virtua Fighter yet?
We don't have that, and we don't have Panzer Dragoon Mini.
What about Shining Force, that Game Gear game?
We got Gaiden. Shining Force.
Oh, that actually exists? Okay, cool.
And we got Defenders of Oasis, and we got every Sonic, as far as I can think of. Are there any Sonics we're missing, Ray?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Two. Do we get Chaos? Yep. We got Triple Trouble and Chaos.
I feel like Sega...
Labyrinth and Rush, or whatever it's called, not Rush.
Sonic Drift 2 was the most recent one. Yeah,
I feel like Sega is so obsessed with releasing Game Gear Sonic games, they're just going to start releasing ROM hacks.
Tails Sex Party.
I suppose so, yeah. But it has been, it's kind of a better selection this week than it was before, mostly because I think of Vampire, not the Masquerade.
Master of Darkness.
Yeah, Master of Darkness, which is basically like developed by Sims, but it's also like Sega's big Castlevania ripoff.
I think ripoff is being too kind. I mean, it is a naked, brazen impersonation.
Are Byman Selmont.
It is to Castlevania what Casey Munchkin was to Pac-Man.
Yeah.
But it's not bad. It's just kind of mediocre. It lacks the sort of that extra burst of quality that made Castlevania so good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they tried.
Did they try?
Who developed it?
Sims.
And what are they behind?
Well, Sims did a lot of weird Sega developments for Sega.
Yeah, they were one of Sega's. I don't know if they were in-house, but it was Sims and Compile and someone else.
Sims did a lot of the Sonic stuff, including Game Gear stuff, but they also did, like, Outrun 2019, for example.
Was that
were they behind Zaxxon 3D?
Game?
That was on Genesis. Pop,
okay, sorry. I'm thinking something different.
Zaxxon 3D? You mean...
Or Zaxxon 2000, Mother Base.
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Possibly. It's crappy enough.
actually, there was the Zaxxon 3D for Master System.
Right, yeah.
So I was thinking of both.
Yeah. So yeah, they did those things, and yeah, they were a big part of Sega's output during those days.
Master of Darkness is interesting because, not just because it's a brazen Castlevania knockoff, but also because of its history. It came out pretty late in the Genesis or the Master System's life cycle.
Yeah.
Lifestyle.
I live the Master System lifestyle.
It came out pretty late in the life cycle, so it never came to America as a Master System game. It was only in Europe. And then we got a Game Gear port, which, you know, because Master System and Game Gear basically used the same hardware, a lot of Master System to Game Gear conversions were basically the same game, but cropped down, and that's pretty much what this was.
Yeah.
So that did come to the U.S., but it was pretty obscure and hard to find. So just having this game, even though it does command kind of a high price, $5 on Virtual Console, is cool, just because the only way to get this otherwise was to pay a lot more for that for the Game Gear version or to import it from Europe.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it existing. I'm okay with it being here. I finally got to play it, and I was really startled by how Castlevania it wants to be.
Yeah.
It even has wall meat, except it's dressed up as a crystal or a bottle of medicine.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely be talking about that later in the show, that sort of Master System Game Gear releases, differences, and similarities stuff. What else came out? I guess Sonic Drift 2, as we mentioned.
Yep. And G-Lock.
G-Lock, that's right. Sonic Drift 2, yes, they did only release Sonic Drift 2 in America.
I was going to ask
on
that.
Game Gear.
Okay.
For some reason, there was a period of time when Sega was just releasing whatever Japanese stuff without any sort of really translation, because I guess I didn't need them, but, you know.
What Sonic racing game am I thinking of that didn't get released?
Sonic Drift 1.
Okay.
That's about it. Everything else came out.
Okay.
Because we got Sonic R, Sonic Drifters? Sonic Riders, excuse me.
There you go.
Yeah. So we got every single Sonic racing game except Sonic Drift 1. But Sonic Drift 2 is not really that notable anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I guess there is another game that they could release. They could bring over the import version of Sonic Drift 1 and charge an extra dollar for it.
Probably.
The $6 Game Gear game.
Yeah, why not? Sure. And G-Lock, which of course in the arcade and whatnot was a first-person crazy shooting game, sort of a spin-off of Afterburner in a way. But then they ported that all the way down to the Game Gear.
And what was it on Game Gear? I haven't tried it yet.
It was also a first-person sort of dogfighting game in that way.
That worked really well.
Yeah, well, they tried.
that kind of is the story of Game Gear's life. Well, they tried.
Yeah, I mean, well, what can you do with that sort of technology anyway?
Right.
I mean, Sega kind of is like the one, they are the ones bold enough to like just port it in that same sort of style. Like they could have turned G-Lock into like a side-scrolling shooter or something.
I should have gotten Argonaut to convert it for them.
Yeah.
I think Energizer and Duracell should have jumped on board as like the main funders of Sega Game Gear games, because that thing was designed to just eat batteries.
It's true.
For breakfast.
Yeah, and it didn't even come with any.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nintendo thought ahead, at least. All their stuff came with batteries.
The other game that came out on Virtual Console this week was for Wii U Virtual Console, and that was Pilot Wings.
Oh, yes.
Which is a game I've never really liked that much, but I know a lot of people have a fondness for it.
Yeah, I do not like the first Pilot Wings. Everything else after it is great.
Yeah, once you get past the fact that everything's spinning and getting bigger and smaller, the novelty kind of disappears.
The spinning JPEG.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to judge distances and landings and that sort of thing.
I like the skydiving minigame still. It still gives me a sense of speed, even though it's extremely primitive.
Yeah, I'll give it that. But also, like, the music's kind of weird. I just don't... To me, it feels like it didn't really find its voice until Pilot Wings 64 and then Resort, because those
music,
are a little more boppier.
The music is by this composer named Soya Oka. She did Mario Kart and SimCity.
Yeah.
And I really like her SimCity tracks a lot.
True.
They're fantastic, and the orchestrated ones are even better, but
you're right.
I don't know what was up with Pilot Wings. It's a little too sleepy.
Yeah, Mario Kart has really kind of unusual music, too, because it's a racing game, but it just seems so subdued.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like... It's not
easy
even
listening.
Like... I don't know, you think with a kart racing game it would be upbeat and wacky, but it's not even that. That's kind of been the more recent Mario Karts, but the original, everything just kind of sounded like, I don't know, like it was being smothered beneath a pillow.
It's Mario and all his friends just having a good Sunday together racing something.
Yeah, all of our stuff is like that, pretty much.
Before we move on, I mean, do you guys have any other retro console things to talk about? I could talk about one retro re-release that we've missed. Final Fantasy VII is now on Steam.
Oh, yes.
You don't own one of the many ways to play that game.
Is there
game.
An achievement for saving Aerith now?
No, but there are now cloud saves, so make whatever damn jokes you want to about that.
Oh, people have already made that joke.
Yeah, and achievements, I think, and achievements. But I hear the port is not great.
Well, it's basically, it's not really a port. I mean, it was already a port.
Yeah, I mean.
Is it the IDOS game from the
basically
1998?
Yeah.
Oh god,
so I'm sure the backgrounds were like upscaled to 640 by 480 at max, or maybe not even, I don't know,
whatever resolution you want.
Okay.
Nearest neighbor scaling.
Can you just put a gross filter on that? And
no, I mean,
be like,
you can with a mod, I'm sure.
What happened to Cloud's world? Everything's been glazed.
Yeah, so Square released it on PC last year again, and they sort of made their own website / mini Steam for it, you know?
That's right,
with all the achievements and stuff. And it also had, like, badly thought DRM attached to it.
Oh, can you explain that?
It was, like, Securom plus, like, Digital River, who's, like, this really bad reputation distribution company. They had, like, you could only download it again for 30 days. So even if you bought it, it would only stay on your account for, like, 30 days or something.
Oh.
So apparently that's all gone for the Steam version. There's still like a less bad DRM. Or no, I'm sorry. You still have to get a Square Enix account.
Okay.
And sign up for that to actually, you know, use it properly, I suppose. But
that's something I would like to see in this coming generation, is third-party publishers finally realizing that they're really terrible at doing these Steam-like systems.
God,
and backing away from things like Origin and Uplay. Those are just the worst.
Yeah, but those things are still bolted on Steam, too. So it's like, Steam will probably let them use the lesser of two evils, I guess. Like Ubisoft still has to bolt Uplay onto their stuff, even though it's on Steam.
I feel like this release of Final Fantasy VII is going to be a good bait and switch for a lot of people, a lot of PC gamers who just kind of remember that game maybe from their youth and maybe have moved on just to PC gaming, and they'll download it and they'll be like, I wonder what they've improved. And it'll just be like, oh, it's still pretty hideous.
Well, before this re-release, people were modding it a lot. They were improving the character models, at least.
That's true, And I think this one has like a character editor or some kind of cheat system built into it now that you can...
What is
it? I don't know the details behind it, unfortunately. Sorry, I didn't do that much research.
Not like modding, but like stat modding.
Yeah, something like that.
We didn't do research.
So if you want to play through Final Fantasy VII again, the achievements, little tiny JPEGs that pop up that show people what you've done with your life, then...
Can you hack in 32 of the 132 soldiers and...
Oh, God.
And find the secret that unlocks when that happens?
Revive Aerith?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to talk to the general on the wall market. He's sick and needs medicine.
The sky's the limit. All right, well, that sounds good. But let's go ahead and move on to our main topic this week, which is the Ninja Gaiden series.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we ever really properly covered this, at least the audio version of Retronauts, Jeremy.
I don't believe so. But then again, I don't remember a lot of things.
It was brought up when relevant, but there was never an entire episode or anything like that.
I was thinking maybe it was a bonus stage at some point. Okay.
No, not even that. Okay, now we can begin.
Yes, okay.
Act one.
And while we don't have a special guest today, we do have a sort of a guest. It's a new friend to the show, but I think it may be also an old friend to some of you, in your hearts at least. That is the voice of the Game Player's Game Tape.
Welcome to Ninja Gaiden, Game Player.
Thank you, Mr. Game Tape. So,
Ray, I don't mean to like interrupt you on this, but I had that tape.
Yeah.
I had that tape, and some of the games were played through on slow motion.
Yeah.
And that's not fun to watch.
Yeah, well, they had to show you what to do.
We're going
to
play Amagon with slow motion.
Thank you. The best way to get hawks is to duck, then turn, kneel, and stab them.
So, yes, Ninja Gaiden, a well-celebrated series from Tecmo. Most people probably know it best as the NES trilogy, but we may blow your minds a bit if you're not completely familiar with everything that's out there. And we're going to go through at least two different eras of the Ninja Gaiden franchise.
I just want to say I'm really impressed that dude pronounced Gaiden so properly. Everyone else back in the day called it Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah. There's also the guy in The Wizard who goes, Ninja Gaiden. Hi. I hate that guy. So I guess we can start where it sort of all began, because, I don't know, the first two games were kind of developed in concurrently, but this is the arcade game Ninja Gaiden. And
you really don't need this one.
Oh, yes, we do. It's fun. It's not that bad of a beat-em-up, but this was released in the arcades in 1988. It's very typical of Japanese beat-em-ups of 1988.
Which is that it's not very fun and hasn't aged well.
I think it's fun enough because it does, in context, it does some neat things with the gameplay. Like, Ryu is more acrobatic. Like, it's about Ryu Hayabusa again, but he's just like, the entire plot is him going to USA to just beat up thugs.
Not even the USA, just USA.
Yeah, in the intro it says, Ninja, go to USA or something. And he's just beating up guys to overthrow some evil guy who thinks he's trying to be like Nostradamus and trying to take over the world or something. It's also like a beat 'em up in that all the plot is basically shoved into the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So
I really like this era of beat 'em ups because I feel like all the Japanese developers were inspired by crime movies from the 70s and early 80s that depict New York as just a hellhole where every criminal looks like they came from a different punk rock band.
Well, that's what New York was like until Giuliani cleaned it up.
That's true. He made all those punk rockers like dye their hair normal colors and take off their chains.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden is basically real world events outside Times Square. circa 1983.
Lots of Jason masks.
He goes to Vegas too, right? And climbs up on like big neon clowns and stuff. So
and I never played past the first stage. It was just so it was so infuriating with the instant kill cars and things like that.
Yeah, and Ninja crosses the street. Yeah, it's like you should just hit the button. I mean, come on, Ryu.
Yeah,
Ryu.
What?
I said Ryu.
No, they
Ryu.
Said me.
Wait. How does that game player's guy pronounce his name?
I don't think he does.
Okay.
He just says like, our ninja.
Ninja.
He says our ninja.
He actually thinks the guy's name is Gaiden.
Yeah,
probably.
You are Gaiden.
By the way, this was developed by Tecmo's Strong Team. I suppose could be the precursor to Team Ninja, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, when the arcade splash screen shows up, it was like 1988 Strong. It was like, was that Dukakis' slogan or something? I'm 88 Strong.
If they call themselves Strong Team and they're going to make a game like this, I assume that they're just probably the biggest, bulkiest guys in the Tecmo office, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or at least they're contributing to most of the tobacco smell in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, based on Tomonobu Itagaki, I'm sure they were all really beefy and very, yeah. very intimidating. And, no, wait.
So many sunglasses. But yeah, like the fact that Ryu goes to USA and does all this stuff, it's like the stage design is a lot more urban than any of the other Ninja Gaiden games, really, because a lot of it takes place on city streets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess also because it's a beat-em-up, Ryu really doesn't use his sword that much, which became so, you know, such a normal, iconic thing afterwards.
Ninja Ryu Kenden in Japan, the legend of the ninja dragon sword.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
So, kind of, the sword's a big deal. It's important.
His fighting in the arcade game is not at all ninja-like in any way. It feels like he might as well be Guy from Final Fight. I feel like the Ninja Gaiden games for the NES, he's way more ninja-like, and then ninjas kill with one strike.
It's like the arcade Ryu is Chuck Norris to the home console's Bruce Lee.
That's true, yeah.
He's yeah, like except the, not as hairy.
The doughier, whiter guy. You just can't tell because he's got a mask on.
Yeah.
It's like, that's Steven Seagal.
He really doesn't even pull out his sword until there's like a certain combo to perform, you know? Then he'll just quickly pull out the sword and then slash a guy, and then that's it. Back to.
But does he wipe the blade free of blood before he puts it back in the scabbard?
No, he's not very elegant that way. Yeah. It's not very
ninja-like.
Is
he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, like I mentioned before, he does a lot of acrobatic stuff. So he does like lots of elaborate jumping and, you know, you can swing on poles and things like that. So that's like the most ninja thing he really does in terms of like the stereotype, I suppose.
Can we trace this game to any particular piece of media? I know like American Ninja is a movie, but I believe after. It just, everything I watch from watching the arcade and long play, just like everything seems very familiar, but it could just be like a number of stereotypes from a number of crime martial arts movies.
You're probably right. I mean, it's like you said, I mean, that's just like a big point of influence for not just, you know, these guys, but lots of people, even filmmakers themselves. So yeah, there was stuff like American Ninja and just like, you know, that general grimy sort of urban crime movies.
Japanese arcade action games were often at their best when they were just taking what they, you know, what was imported from Hollywood and processing it and turning it into whatever.
Yeah.
Like making it fit some genre.
I guess related to that, this game is also peppered with a lot of characteristics of Japanese arcade games at the time, the late 80s.
I don't mean to interrupt. I just realized you said it was 1988.
Yes.
So this game predates Final Fight. It's between Double Dragon and Final Fight.
Right.
So I think maybe understanding a lot of its characteristics, you kind of need to understand that it's before the genre sort of came into its own, I guess, a year later.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because Final Fight was really like the next milestone after Double Dragon, for sure. So yeah, it's definitely in between there. But yeah, this has all the hallmarks of a great Japanese late 80s game. You have broken English.
Mm.
You have different kind of stereotypes.
I noticed that. I want to know how big Friday the 13th was in this game. In Japan at the time, because so many enemies were based on Jason in so many different games from this time.
You're right. To be fair, it's really just thugs in like hockey masks, but they do kind of lumber around like they're just like urban Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be that is such an iconic, you know, monster design that everybody would want to rip it off. You know,
I just
don't know how big that was, because I saw it in so many games.
Yeah.
I would say something like Splatterhouse is much more openly inspired by Friday the 13th. But
yeah, that was like the same year, too.
Clearly those games or those movies made their way internationally.
Oh, so Splatterhouse was
America's biggest export has been film for a very long time.
Right.
So pop culture. So
it's true.
Yeah, those movies made a big splash, not just in Japan, but everywhere. But we were getting pop culture back from Japan. So it was like what we were feeding them, we were getting back processed their distinct style.
Yeah, I mean, that is really just interesting of itself. And this is really, like, you know, definitely a product of that. And what else do we have? We have plagiarized music, at least in stage 5, because the boss fight is basically just Iron Man.
Yes.
They added, like, one or two more notes to it, but they basically lifted out. And I believe they at least modified the music for the port of Ninja Gaiden that came out on Wii Virtual Console Arcade.
Was Ninja Gaiden in the Tecmo Classics or whatever that was released on Xbox?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Okay. No, it wasn't. Tecmo Bowl was the big highlight there. And also, like I said, clowns. Lots of clown imagery, you know.
Everyone wants to kill clowns, right?
Yeah. That's a big thing of Japanese games, I'd like to think. And yeah, so
that was inspired by Smokey Robinson's Tears of a Clown.
Yeah.
So like this game isn't quite as smooth as you might think, it being about a ninja. But like we said, it is kind of right before Final Fight, and that's where things sort of got a little bit better.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, didn't the controller have like a very unique kind of stick design with a button on the tip? Am I thinking of the right game here?
I have no idea, because honestly, I don't think I've seen the machine in person.
I've only ever played it in the arcades.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why I don't have a very strong opinion of it, because, you know, it was that kind of crowded experience, and I went in expecting Ninja Gaiden, the NES game, and got Ninja Gaiden, the very shallow beat-em-up with instant kill cars and things like that, and so it just kind of failed to make an impression. I couldn't hear the music, and it wanted my quarters over and over again.
Yeah.
At least not paying my quarters to continue paid off.
So it also just kind of moves a bit slowly. Like a lot of stages, I think almost every stage is auto-scrolling as well.
Hmm.
Or at least, you know, faux auto-scrolling. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite feel as like you're quite getting the finesse that you might think it being a ninja game.
Doesn't he go from Japan to New York City by boat?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
You're a ninja, man.
Go through the Suez Canal.
We would also be remiss if we did not mention the continue screen
of
this game, which is pretty much the only thing that survived from this game's legacy, I think.
Yeah, that was what I was alluding to.
Yeah. So after you lose all your lives and stuff, the continue screen is a scene of Ryu sort of fighting for his life and, you know, about to be sawed in half in what looks like this demon lair, but the demon lair doesn't exactly appear anywhere else in the game. I mean, I guess it's the ultimate intent of the bad guy, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. Perhaps he's going to bring all the demons into the real world and hell will break loose. But yeah, it's kind of like just an odd, suggestive, violent piece when the rest of the game is not very bloody or anything or gory necessarily. But, you know, you have this saw blade lowering down on Ryu, and if it counts down, you know, it's not quite gory, but it'll like fade to red.
That also happens in Final Fight, so I don't know if they were inspired or they just came upon that idea.
Well, yeah, Final Fight was the stick of dynamite, wasn't it?
Right, it's like they're tied up and they're like blowing on the fuse or something.
Right, but not quite as gruesome.
No.
Definitely more comical. Points to Tecmo, I guess, for having that survive. Mm-hmm. That's what everyone remembers from that game. This game was also ported quite a bit to different sort of computer systems, mostly. I have the Atari Lynx version, which is not that bad of a port, really, all things considered, because it mostly nails the feel of it, and, I mean, the graphics are usual low-res Lynx crap, but they pretty much pulled it off.
It looked okay from what I watched. Just watched the YouTube video of it. It's like it looks like the arcade game on the Lynx, which is, I guess, all you could expect.
Right, yeah. That kind of makes it one of the better ones, too, on the Lynx, if you can believe it.
So you mentioned that this game was developed concurrently with the NES game. That seems like something that happened a fair amount. In your notes for the episode, you mentioned Strider, which is always kind of the like that first grand ambition to create polymorphic content.
Yeah.
An arcade game and a Famicom game and a
comic book.
Manga and a cartoon.
But was
and a
the
toy
arcade
line.
Game that didn't come out as a different name in the United States, or was it still Ninja Gaiden?
It was Ninja Gaiden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weird.
Was it Ninja Gaiden in Japan, or was
the
it Ninja
long play I watched? It was called like Shadow Warrior or something.
That's probably in Europe.
Yeah, okay.
You couldn't say Ninja in Europe for a long time.
No.
It was actually outlawed.
Too many ninja kids running around.
Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles? What was it called in Japan? Was it released as Ninja Ryukenden or Ninja Gaiden?
Yeah, it was Ryukenden in Japan, in the arcade.
Hmm.
Yeah, again, why Gaiden? Because then they eventually canonized the name. I mean, they made it the same in Japan and everywhere with the reboot.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it had, not to jump ahead, but I thought it had something to do with how Ryu's story in the first game wasn't the main. He kind of got dragged into the main story. You know, he's doing his own thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure it out.
Well, I guess that doesn't that theory doesn't fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange that they would call it Ninja Gaiden for the US, because most Americans didn't know what a Gaiden was.
No.
So that had like I said, a lot of people thought that his name was Gaiden and they were really confused when it was Ryu instead.
And as a kid, to me, the kanji above Gaiden looked like the word the. So I thought it was Ninja the Gaiden for a long time. I was like, no, that's just Chinese or something. I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, then, if we're done exploring the first Ninja Gaiden, we can talk about the other first Ninja Gaiden, the one everyone knows, Ninja Gaiden for the NES.
This area isn't too bad. Your progress needs to become smooth and fast.
Right.
Is this like a lovemaking?
So, yeah, as we said, Ninja Gaiden on NES was supposedly made in parallel with the arcade game like Strider. But this is a much different game. It's a much more straight action platformer. It's faster for one thing. But it also seems to borrow a lot of elements from like Konami games, you know, kind of Castlevania-ish in a
way. Yeah, the way you hit things to like the equivalent of candles to collect power-ups. And you press up to use a sub-weapon.
Yeah.
That's very similar. But probably the biggest similarity is actually one that's really intangential, which is the rhythm of the game. Like, both Castlevania and Ninja Gaiden, you just, like, as you learn where the enemies appear and how the levels are structured, you get a feel for it. And, you know, once you get the hang of it, you can just cruise through without any trouble.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, the HUD looks similar.
That's true.
But yeah, I like the fact that Ninja Gaiden, the first one, I mean, compared to the other two, like, you have the item containers that are, like, different things in each stage.
Like hummingbirds for some reason.
There'll be a lantern stage one, and then, and then the
killed
birds.
A hummingbird, and I got an extra life.
Yeah. I always like that touch. I guess they changed it for some obvious reasons, like, visual reasons later, but yeah, it was nice. And this was, like, one of the earliest NES games, I think, to really put story in the game rather than, like, in the pages of the manual, because it's all about Ryu Hayabusa, who's, you know, seeking the ones who killed his father. Then he goes around the world and ends up wrapped up in trying to fight a demon lord who's trying to awake this great demon again. It's sort of like the arcade game plot, but, you know, actually spelled out a bit more.
So. He spends less time in the city and more time escaping from military bases and being shuttled into the Amazon and descending into a demon's lair.
Yeah. I really like the stage variety in the game.
I think, like, Castlevania sort of organically showed your progress through a world, but in this game it really provided context for why am I in the jungle now? Why am I here now?
Yeah, the transitions from one place to another weren't necessarily as smooth as in Castlevania. But yeah, the cutscenes kind of provided the same role as Castlevania's map, which was to say, okay, you've, you know, gone through this area, and now you're going to this area, and here's why. And, you know, it definitely wasn't the first NES game that I played to have a big emphasis on story, but the way the story was presented was miles beyond anything else. I mean, I look back in games like Bayonet Commando and Galgo 13 had a lot of story to them, but that was all kind of front-loaded or, you know, just played out through very simple text dialogues.
Yeah.
Whereas this was the big interstitial cutscenes that basically became an industry standard. We're still seeing things like that, or, you know, derived from that.
Yeah, the cinema scenes, as they were called back then. Yeah, just these sort of anime-ish kind of, you know, pans and pan scenes and characters introduced in different ways. And, you know, then you get to read about it all, read their dialogue. And yeah, that was basically became the standard cutscene as we know it. But it was also like right after that, it was used in like a bunch of other NES games. Like everybody else, they use that exact same style, the letterboxed graphics and the dialogue.
Fantasy Star 2 also.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the funny thing is, the first I ever heard of Ninja Gaiden was quite a while before it was released, when it was being promoted, I think, in Nintendo Fun Club newsletter or something with an advertisement for a bunch of techno games.
Right.
That one was interesting because, you know, obviously it had really cool graphics, like just from the screenshots, but there was something that said, you know, like the story plays out through cinemas, just like the movie. So for the longest time, I thought, wow, there's a movie. And I need to find out what this movie is. And I could never find the movie. And I don't know. It could have been more disappointing. It could have been like when I found out that there was a movie called Life Force that had nothing whatsoever to do with the NES game. It's about space vampires? What?
Yeah, I think someone missed a plural. Sounds like it. So, I mean, if you guys want to say anything else that you remember about the game or enjoy about it.
Man, I could talk for a long time about Ninja Gaiden, actually.
Please.
Bob, maybe you should go before
I... I don't have as much familiarity with Jeremy, but I have to say I really love the cover art for these games. And they could have easily changed it, because they normally did, just because they wanted to have their own... The American branch wanted to have their own stamp on whatever. Maybe this art is too Japanese, but the art for the first game is just really evocative of what that sort of experience is supposed to be, like the ultimate, in my opinion, the ultimate mashup of NES action games, like drawing in all of these different elements from things we played before.
Right. The US box art wasn't the same as the Japanese box art.
It wasn't?
No, the Japanese box art is basically just like Ryu and the demon statue.
Oh, okay.
However, it's the same on the arcade flyer.
But that's what I was probably thinking of, yeah. I mean, they didn't get just like, okay, they didn't just get a picture of like a guy in a ninja costume or whatever and in front of a backdrop like they could have or whatever.
I was always fond of Nintendo Power's Ninja Gaiden cover where
that's what
like
I was thinking of
the cardboard cutout background and like some dude with blue eyes is like, I'm from Japan, I'm a ninja.
Yeah, this got a cover, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I mean this game was something I spent a lot of time with, and I got really good at it. Like I could, you know, finish it in less than an hour at a certain point. There was one time I actually played through and almost beat it without dying. I did die against the third form of Jikyo at the end. Mm-hmm. But that means, of course, I had to go all the way back to the beginning of 6-1.
Yeah.
But yeah, the game, it's really interesting because it's incredibly difficult. But like I said, it does have a rhythm to it. And once you learn where all the enemies spawn and, you know, where things are going to keep infinitely spawning and, you know, just where which weapons you should be using in which circumstances, you can get really, really good at it and just kind of power through. And it's not a game where when you lose, you feel frustrated because you're like, God damn those birds. But but at the same time, it gives you enough tools, it gives you enough precision, enough weapons, and it's very fast-paced and precise. So you can really kind of power through it and you know, get good at it. Like when you get good at it, you feel like you've really accomplished something, and it's not because you've learned to deal with the arcane mechanics of some fussy, clumsy, primitive early NES game. Like the game actually lends itself to that style of play.
Yeah. And what you mentioned about like the weapons and items and stuff, it has sort of also had that bit from Castlevania and, you know, I guess like Ghosts and Goblins, where like you kind of have to keep an eye on what is dropping out of the item container, because if you get the wrong weapon, then you might be screwed.
The game is good about giving you weapons you need, sub-weapons you need at the right time, but it's also a little dickish about occasionally putting something that you don't want out there.
I think that's the worst in like the last stage, right?
Yeah. Because I was watching a ton of the cutscenes before this. I was doing some research, and I couldn't help but notice how bad of a ninja Ryu is.
He's also a real jerk.
He is a jerk. But like every stage, the pretense of like how he got there, he's either captured or like falls into a trap door or gets something stolen from him. Like he's very inattentive for being a ninja. I guess that's just convenient for the plot, but I thought that was funny.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he does get wrapped up into some stuff, especially in the whole trilogy.
But the story also does some interesting things. Like at one point, the CIA recruits him, and they're like, "Hey, so there's this terrible thing happening. Why don't you go do that for us? Because you're all wrapped up in it,
or we'll kill you."
I don't know. Like that was kind of a higher level than I would really expect. A little more nuanced than I would expect from a video game plot of that time.
Yeah,
that kind of machination and back and forth. You know, lots of different parties being involved and interested. It always bothered me, though, that the dudes you see, like the ninjas you see in the cutscenes doing stuff, are supposed to be some of the bosses. So, like, when you fight the Bloody Moth at the end of Stage 5, or Act 5, he's supposed to be the guy in gray who killed your dad. But I'm like, how did that big, huge dude with the Scottish armor and everything, like, how did he turn into the little skinny ninja dude with the sword? Why didn't he kill dad with, like, his lightning attack? Because that's way more powerful.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, without the CIA, he wouldn't have fallen in love.
It's true.
That's true. And, you know, I think I mentioned this on an old episode of Retronauts, but in college I had a good friend named Irene Liu. Her last name was spelled L-U, but... But nevertheless, like, there was one day when I just had this sudden memory and was like, wait a minute, wasn't Irene Liu the girl from Ninja Gaiden? And after that, it was always really weird.
Yeah. It was fate, right?
No. It was. Okay. No, I don't know.
I don't know.
I do want to talk about the biggest dick move in this game, and that is what they do to you in the final stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's one of the more memorable dick moves of 8-bit gaming, or maybe of just gaming in general.
Well, it was certainly, this was one of the highlights for sure.
It's like, basically, they changed the rules, right, that are normally in play for continuing.
Kind of
shift the rules.
Jeremy, you have more experience. Can you explain?
Yeah, so basically when you get to the end of a stage, okay, so each act consists of one, two, or three stages. And at the very end, there's a boss chamber and you fight the boss. If you lose against the boss, then you're sent back to, you know, the previous checkpoint, which is somewhere in the previous stage. Unless you have to continue, then you're sent back to the beginning of that stage. but you're never sent back to the beginning of an act, because that would just be uncool, until you get to the final boss. And if you die against him, not even continue, but if you die against the final boss, then you are sent all the way back to Act 6-1, which is, you know, sends you through three of the most grueling stages in video game history.
And the boss has three forms,
The boss has three forms. Yep. You don't get a life refill between the forms. No. You don't get a ninja spirit power recharge between the forms.
Nope.
So that means that if you can take down the first boss form, that's great, but any damage you have carries over into the next battle, and also you can't use sub-weapons. So you have to fight this extremely agile, extremely powerful boss that flies around the room, you know, with whatever you, like, come as you are, basically. And then if you somehow manage to beat him, there's a third form, and that's also very, very difficult.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, you have to attack parts of it that don't even register damage on the boss's health meter to get at the part that is vulnerable.
Oh, that's right, yeah. While it's raining down
fingernails.
Yeah.
So it's really, 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 really difficult. Like, that's one of those games where when you see the ending, you think, I earned this.
Yeah. Not to stick on this first game for too long, though, but did you write down the director? I don't have his name, but I know some other things he's done. I know you talked to him, Jeremy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Yoshizawa.
Were you the one who discovered that he was the Klonoa guy, or did that just come out earlier? I don't know, because I know he worked under a pseudonym.
I was interviewing him about Klonoa, and he started talking about how he had worked on Ninja Gaiden, and so then we talked about Ninja Gaiden for a while, and a lot of the things I had noticed about the game, like about the rhythm of the play, were things that he deliberately put in there. And also, the guy who wrote the story was Masato Kato of Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross, Xenogears, etc.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's amazing.
I'm hoping to interview him this year at TGS, actually.
Hideo Yoshizawa.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this game kind of has some roots with like people who worked on this game went on to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, other cool platformers, at least.
And RPGs.
Yeah. Well, Klonoa specifically.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Klonoa is a much more gentle RPG or action platformer than Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, that's a weird leap. But thankfully, still good games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. One last thing I think about this first Ninja Gaiden is that while the arcade game got a lot of different ports, like the computer systems mostly, because like in Europe, a lot of Japanese arcade games were ported to their computer systems, this one did not get a lot of ports. Besides like Ninja Gaiden Trilogy, like years later. However, Hudson did port it to the PC Engine in like 1992, so it was a bit long in the tooth by then, but
yeah,
it's actually not that bad of a port at all. I mean, depending on like how you prefer like your art styles, I mean, this one is a bit more brighter. There's more colors, obviously, because it's PC Engine. But they got the core gameplay down. And it feels pretty much identical.
I couldn't get past the scrolling. I can't believe they hadn't figured out scrolling by 1992.
No, they had. So the question is, why would they do that?
Because
they had the technology.
Yeah. Well, whoever was working on it must have just been like, here's a shortcut.
Yeah, so the background scrolling is this weird sort of like one frame at a time sort of like MSX style stuff, which is, really weird.
Looks like the city is just moving behind you at its own clip.
Yeah, it's like the guys I hired did not figure out background scrolling
correctly. Yeah.
but yeah, like I said, it might actually be the best version, really, if you want to look for it or play it or whatever, but it didn't make it out of Japan either, probably because it was 1992 and there were more impressive TurboGrafx games to be pushing at that time, at least over here.
One last thing, Ray. I saw you pointed out those effing birds as a note.
Yes.
And
sure.
Yeah. And like I say, as a bird owner, I can't get anything done at home because I'm constantly being knocked backwards.
Yes.
They do that.
Yeah. And plus yours talks.
Yeah. It's like I get trash talked and knocked backwards.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, the birds deserve special hatred in this game because they are so difficult to kill. They're very small, and they're very fast, and they come at you from strange angles, and then they arc back around, and they'll just kind of keep boomeranging at you back and forth, always from strange angles, always very, very difficult to hit. And this is one of those NES games where anytime you scroll an enemy spawn point off screen or even to the edge of the screen, the enemy will continue spawning. It's not like some of the like we're used to games like Mario where you kick a Koopa and if you actually destroy it, you know, like knock it off the edge, then it's gone. But this is one of those old school games where enemies just keep showing up and showing up. So there's no way to kind of clear out an enemy, backtrack, and then go forward, because if you do that, you'll just have that enemy to fight again. And the birds can actually pile up. You can have multiple birds from the same spawn point on the same screen.
Jesus. Yeah, I've mentioned this before on Retronauts, but like Power Blazer by Taito is another NES game that is also very bad with that enemy respawn
thing. God, yeah.
It's just so bad with it.
didn't they change that for Power Blade, though?
It was sort of rebooted into Power Blade. Yeah, same concept.
Is Shatterhand at all like Ninja Gaiden? I'm remembering that.
No.
No?
Not really.
Okay. No. I think I get that and Power Blade mixed up for some reason.
No.
My bad.
Shatterhand, Power Blade, Vice Project Doom.
Yes. Thank you.
I like to refer to them as prototype games.
Yeah,
sure. Like, kind of dude bro games back in the NES days. That was what passed for that.
However, the developer of Shatterhand, Natsume, will have a connection in the story.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, my goodness.
But for now, let's move on to Ninja Gaiden 2, The Dark Sword of Chaos.
Here's a series of well-timed jumps.
Okay. anyway, this was the sequel in 91, and this is when everybody was basically knew about Ninja Gaiden at this point. Everybody was loving it, let's say.
The wizard put it all into our minds.
Oh, no. And taught us how to mispronounce it. Very typical sequels at the time. Better graphics, better gameplay, and
lots of environmental effects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, true. Yeah, like
including the dickish lost levels, shifting wind.
Yeah. At least you could see the wind, though.
That's true.
There's some visual indicator.
Yeah, other than like two leaves.
So, yeah.
And lost levels. Yeah. So this was like much like me and Mega Man 3. This was like the time when I was finally into this series and I was finally there for everything, because like I got an NES into like the end of 88. So like I was catching up to a lot of stuff. So now that I was already now an established Ninja Gaiden fan along with everything else, I was like, okay, yes, Ninja Gaiden 2, let's go for it. And thankfully it was just as awesome as I would hope it would be. And the plot is not too different from the first game. I mean, there's a different enemy this time. Instead of Jakio, it is Ashtar. Yeah, he's the upfront villain anyway. And he also has his evil machinations or what have you. And Ryu has to go through and run
run all through trapdoors.
Yeah.
I really like in one of the cutscenes, it's super self-referential, where in the first game you meet Irene and you dismiss her and then she shoots you in the cutscene.
Yeah.
In this game, you meet someone who looks like Duke Nukem. I forget his name.
Robert.
It looks like he does the same thing Irene does. He shoots you, but then it's revealed the boss that you just had fought is rising up behind you and he shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a cool touch. Like, that is so self-referential. You didn't see it that often in 91 outside of, Princess in Another Castle, Just Kidding or whatever.
Also kind of a classic sort of I don't know, anime-ish sort of
definitely thing. Yeah.
I'm shooting you. No, I'm not shooting the guy behind you. I was just playing Devil May Cry 2 yesterday and I saw the exact same thing.
Are you feeling okay, Ray? Devil May Cry 2?
Yeah, it was just for fun.
I tried doing that once.
just to see how bad it was. So like I said, it also had like really improved gameplay, and like two of the things I really like about it is, one, you can climb up walls. Mm-hmm. You can move on the walls now, because in the first game,
instead of having to do the little pickup jumps.
Right, yeah, pickup jumps, exactly. And two, you have a new magic ability, the Ninja Clones, which basically just you get it and it spawns a second reddish ninja behind you.
They're basically Gradius's options.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's fantastic, because you can like sort of position them just correctly, and you can use them as sort of like a decoy to slash at enemies.
Yeah, they move like X number of frames behind you.
Yeah.
So if you jump into the air and then you land, there'll be a clone like suspended in the air. As long as you don't move, it'll stay there and it can attack things that are normally out of your reach. So those become essential for fighting bosses.
Yeah. So I don't know how much more we can say about this compared to the first game, because like I said, it was really just a big polishing of everything that came before it. They changed the item containers. Now it's like a standardized red orb.
Hmm.
I guess it sort of serves a dual purpose of,
J.J. Abrams reference.
Of like once you hit one and an item flies out, you've already trained yourself into like looking for those. And also it's like less work, I guess, on the side of the artist.
Yeah, because they kind of have a little like sheen of light that flashes across them too. Yeah, I just watched through the Game Center CX episodes of Ninja Gaiden 2, and I honestly didn't remember a lot of the game. Like, the first one's burned into my memory because I bought it and played it, and it took me forever to finish it. And then the second one, I rented and actually finished in a weekend. So I remember it being really easy, which I don't think is true. I think I was just like some kind of idiot savant at that point. And because I played through it so fast and had so little trouble getting through it, like I didn't remember anything that happened in the second half of the game. But it's kind of cool. I mean, I like the, I don't know, some of the writing's a little sloppy. Like Irene keeps getting shot and kidnapped and she's still okay. And at the end, she's just like, I feel like I was in a dream. Well, what? But
endorphins like that.
Yeah, I guess. But the way that Ashtar is presented is kind of the man behind the man, only to be like the fourth or fifth act boss. And then, it's actually Jakiu who is really behind it all.
Yeah, Jakiu again. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, maybe we should say something about Jakiu.
Jakiu?
Yeah. Yeah, not to be confused with Jacqueline Onassis.
No, absolutely not.
No.
That's a ROM hack I want to see.
Yeah, oh,
let's do that.
Let's do it.
The way they localized his name, the spelling seemed kind of French, but supposed to be Japanese for like the great demon.
Yeah, Jockey is a Japanese word for like, you know, devil or demon, that sort of thing. And then O means king or lord.
Oh, right. So I didn't know that.
Jockey O. Demon king or what have you. So, yeah, and then in the translation, they spelled it J-A-Q-U-I-O.
J-A-C-Q-U-I-O.
Oh, J-A-C, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really strange... Yeah. They also refer to him as the Guardia de Mew or something, like the... Oh. What would that be? Like the millennial guardian or something?
Possibly, yeah.
Watching these cutscenes and, you know, watching the games being played for this, I noticed that in the later cutscenes, maybe... There in the earlier cutscenes too, there's lots of references to I'm going to kill you or kill or murder, you know, lots of things that were sort of verboten in NES games, and I think it's just like they weren't really paying attention, you know?
Possibly. Not yet.
Yeah, right. Only if it's a Maniac Mansion, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a comedy.
I think certain publishers and certain games of a certain, you know, quality level or visual polish level kind of got away with a little bit more because Nintendo knew, hey, this game is going to do pretty well for us.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I don't think they really knuckled down until there started to be more controversy around video game violence in the 16-bit era. So they would cut things and trim things and phase out religious references and some violence, but they weren't really consistent about it or really aggressive about it until later.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, it just reminds me, like, Ninja Gaiden does not have a whole lot of religious... stuff in it. I mean, it's sort of implied, I guess, because it's like evil lords and stuff, and they're trying to, but it's like, yeah, there's no overt stuff. So
well, in the second game, when you battle Jakiu, he has like a Star of David on his chest. I think was probably supposed to be a pentagram. It would make more sense.
Yeah.
but basically they turned like the Star of David into some sort of evil demonic summoning sign, which That's kind of bad, guys. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. I guess I was more thinking of the first one, but yeah.
It could just be me, though. I think that with the localization, keeping his name Ryu Hayabusa and keeping him, you know, a Japanese character was sort of progressive because 1988 was kind of like the height of anti-Japanese sentiment, the last wave of anti-Japanese sentiment, because there are all these movies being made. Oh, like Japanese economy is going to take us over, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much the height of the economic bubble.
Yeah, and I mean, they could have called Ryu Joe Ninja, because just like with any anime or manga drawing, there's no really ethnicity being displayed there when he takes off his mask.
Joe Ninja was from Wrath of the Black Manta. Wasn't his name Joe?
Oh, crap. Yeah.
Something.
No wonder I just pulled that out of my brain.
Yeah.
And then also the ninja from Ninja 5-0 is named Joe something.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
So Joe Ninja is actually pretty much a common name.
Don't forget Joe Musashi.
Is Irene like Chinese or something? I'm just going to try to say like Ninja Gaiden ended with an interracial kiss. You know?
Maybe.
First giant thing for games.
Yeah, I guess I guess the last name would sort of suggest, Chinese or something.
But my friend was from Taiwan.
So okay.
Right, yeah.
But she wasn't, she didn't have like a big bouffant blonde hairdo.
No.
That's Ninja Gaiden 2. It didn't quite get as ported as much as the first game, or the arcade game, rather. It got an Amiga version by Game Tech, of all people. And it's not good. And in fact, they changed Ryu's colors. So in fact, Ryu is red while the ninja clones are now blue. So
I see.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for that.
Well, they were trying to get, you know, in good with the Street Fighter Blue Shadows.
I guess so.
Oh, wow. I'm wondering, I want to get a picture of how big Tecmo was at this time, because I find it strange that Double Dragon was ported to Hell and Back, but the Ninja Gaiden games were sort of just like really focused on NES, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure Tecmo did get, you know, quite a bit more money after, you know, the international releases of Ninja Gaiden and stuff, and Tecmo Bowl and their sports games.
Oh, God,
were,
yes.
Huge, too.
Yeah. I just don't feel like they were as big as Konami or Capcom, right. Just with their output.
Yeah, they kind of stayed, like, maybe a notch or two below. And then they just sort of went through a lot of weirdness, like, right afterwards, in, like, the Super NES era afterwards. It was just, yeah, didn't quite work out for them until later when they got, like, the Xbox support. And so, yeah,
I was on board with Deception.
Tecmo had been kind of a powerhouse in the early Famicom days. The games they released back then, like Solomon's Key,
yeah,
and Mighty Bomb Jack, did really well in Japan. Rygar also, mm-hmm. to a lesser degree.
Yes, of course, Rygar.
But yeah, they were never really able to capitalize on that for the next few years. It was kind of Ninja Gaiden was the point at which they made their sort of jump into maturity,
yeah,
from, you know, the sort of simple puzzle action games of the early NES days to that kind of top tier NES action game, you know, on par with Mega Man and Castlevania.
Right. Yeah. So it is weird that they didn't quite capitalize it on the whole franchise as much. But, you know, I think people, you know, if you were a kid who loved Ninja Gaiden, like, you knew Tecmo, and you were waiting for them to see what else they would come out with.
Well, they were very smart by saying Tecmo Presents 1989. So yeah, every time you turn on Ninja Gaiden, it begins with that cutscene.
Yes.
It's very, like, seamless and very, very cinematic. So it made an impression.
Yeah, they really put their name out there. Maybe too much, because they also made Tecmo Secret of the Stars, which is the actual name of that game. It's not quite a sports game, guys. You don't have to put it on everything. Let's go ahead and move on to the third installment of Ninja Gaiden on NES. Ninja Gaiden 3, The Ancient Ship of Doom.
We're in the Amazon. Your skills should now be sufficient to play through these areas.
That guy's way off.
Yeah.
My skills were not sufficient to play through Ninja Gaiden 3.
I believe in you.
This was the end of the trilogy. It was supposed to be another big, well, meant to be another big whole installment, released in 92.
But wasn't, like, chronologically, wasn't it actually an interquel? Didn't it actually chronologically come between 1 and 2?
That is true, yes. Yeah. Which is odd, but I guess there's so many games that do that now anyway. So,
yeah.
Yes. Another forward-thinking thing. So, did not note down a whole lot of the plot, and I'm kind of foggy on it.
I don't know. That's the one of the trilogy that I never really played, and it's all down to the fact that they broke the game for the U.S.
That confuses me. I feel like the idea of changing things for an American audience, it could go both ways, and I don't understand how it was like that. Like, they either make it easier or way harder.
I think, like, Ninja Gaiden was a reaction to the rise of the rental market in America. That was around the time that
rentals
makes sense. Were becoming really popular. And Japan squashed out rentals and said, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. But America said, no, you have the right. That's fine. So Japanese developers started making games a lot harder for the U.S. releases so that people couldn't just rent it and beat it and say, well, I don't need to buy this. So it was a protectionist measure. But actually, the way they changed the game kept me from buying it because it was so unreasonably difficult because... Ray, do you want to talk about this?
Well, what was it?
Steal your thunder.
Well, what was it basically? It was just like they lowered the continues, or they took out the continues.
The first two Ninja Gaidens were infinite continues.
Yeah.
So you could get to, you know, Jakio at the end, right, and just keep going back through World 6 all over every time. But with Ninja Gaiden 3, they cut it down to 5 continues, and the game wasn't that much easier than the first two.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So taking a series that is legendary for its difficulty and notorious for, you know, having, you know, making people play and continue over and over again to be able to see the end, if in fact they could ever see it, and then cutting that down, you know, even more, like increasing the difficulty that much, just seems unreasonable to me. It genuinely interferes with my enjoyment of it. And the Japanese version did not have that limitation.
In fact, I believe they kind of... at least from what I've read, they intended the Japanese version to be a little bit easier, just overall compared to the other games, I guess, to try and bring in new people, as
right. And they made the second one a little easier in the sense that if you lose against the final boss, you don't go back to the first chapter of the last act. You go back to the most recent chapter.
How kind of them.
Yeah. So it's only kind of soul-destroying.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was like they tried to make it more difficult for the U.S. version, but it just turned out more unfair.
Yeah.
But, like, the plot is has a big, larger sci-fi bent to it. It's, like, it opens, you know, thinking, like, Irene is dead or whatever, but it also involves this other agent guy who tries to bring in this alien force or what have you. And so, as usual, Ryu has to step in and save the day, and as well as you know, avenge Irene, or is he avenging her?
Isn't there a Ryu clone at some point?
Yeah, it opens with a Ryu clone.
But not like a shadow clone from the second game.
Yeah,
a dude who's like Ryu.
Yes, I'm sorry. Actually, it's this Ryu doppelganger who is accused with killing Irene. So,
but I think really anyone is a Ryu doppelganger when you put on a purple ninja outfit.
Yeah. hey, wait a minute. Is that a ninja stereotype?
Oh, geez, I'm sorry.
Yeah, careful.
I'll be more sensitive.
Yeah. So Ryu is also kind of like on the run too, and he has to clear his name a bit.
The third one, aside from the continue issue, the problem I had with it is it didn't feel like the other games. It had a very different visual style.
Like
the kind of skewed isometric perspective was changed. Mm. And it also added new abilities like the overhand crawl where you could move along bars. It just felt different. Like it had a more complex feel. It seemed a little slower to me.
It seems more like one screen at a time sort of thing.
Yeah,
there
wasn't
a whole lot of scrolling
right. In
the whole game.
Yeah, it didn't quite click with me on the same level as the other two games.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, then on top of that, you have the fact that it's like this weird sci-fi story that happens between the other two games, and so it feels kind of inessential.
Yeah, you're right. And they just didn't really add much to it gameplay-wise either. Ryu had the flashy thing Ryu has now is a special super slash that looks like Strider's super slash as well, but like it's not super useful exactly. And he has all his other abilities basically too, so it's a weird one. It's like it's sort of like Mega Man syndrome. It's like, hey, well, you know, if you like the formula and everything, you'll probably like it well enough, but for those of us who really were expecting something bigger and newer,
this is like the Mega Man 4 of Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Same year, right?
Hmm.
Same sort of time. I remember reading about both, you know, at the same time, like import previews. I was like, oh man, those both look so great. I can't wait to play them. I never bought them.
Yeah, I mean, Ninja Gaiden 3 looks fantastic.
It has
some of the best graphics on NES.
That's
like,
true.
Very, very detailed, but again, like, doesn't quite look like the other two games as a result of that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I do think it looks a little bit cooler looking at it. Like, I kind of want to play it more often than the other two. But then I start to play it, and it's like, okay, well, I don't know.
I'd like for that to come out on virtual console for 3DS, because then I'll, you know, feel motivated to play it.
Yeah.
Save states.
Yes. That one save state is enough of a day saver. Was the NES trilogy. But there was one other little bit of Ninja Gaiden-ness in the Nintendo realm, and that was Ninja Gaiden Shadow for the Game Boy.
These small steps are hard. Watch out for the hawk.
Okay. Anyway, this was not really a Ninja Gaiden game. It was a Ninja Gaidening of a Game Boy port of Natsume's Shadow of the Ninja.
Which was a big-ass Ninja Gaiden ripoff.
Yeah. So Tecmo basically licensed it and put it out on Game Boy.
This feels like the result of an out-of-court settlement to me.
I don't know. It's like if Konami had licensed Vampire Master of Darkness to be a Castlevania game for Game Gear.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, exactly. There you go. I mean, they tried to put in some Ninja Gaiden stuff in it. I mean, obviously, you're Ryu Hayabusa and not those other people from Shadow of the Ninja. And, you know, there's some stuff about the dragon sword that they shoehorned in there into the plot as well. But, yeah, otherwise, it is just a straight platformer and not quite as fun or exciting as the Ninja Gaiden NES games because of that.
Question, how was Tecmo doing with Game Boy development? I just don't remember a lot of Tecmo games for the Game Boy.
Yeah, not great. They had Solomon's Club.
Okay.
That's a fun one. They ported a Sega arcade game called Head On, like a really old one.
Mm.
They made it into Power Racer for Game Boy.
I just feel like with Castlevania and Mega Man, games like that, there was an iteration for every console iteration. Yeah. But Ninja Gaiden, I guess this was it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tecmo had a really weird Game Boy presence. Like, they were barely there. And, like, Game Boy versions of NES games were either, like, really similar or really different. And this one is kind of both, I guess, considering the circumstances behind it. So, yeah, it's like, why couldn't they just make their own Game Boy Ninja Gaiden? Because I think it was getting there, and a lot of other popular NES franchises had Game Boy installments on them. So, very odd. And if you play Shadow the Ninja on NES, you know, you can get the same experience portable. Well, now you get the much superior Ryu Hayabusa.
Mm. As opposed to nameless other ninja guy.
Right, Joe Ninja. Yeah, Joe Ninja.
All that being said, though, Shadow of the Ninja, or sorry, Ninja Gaiden Shadow is really fun. It's a good Game Boy.
Yes, that's true. But it's just, yeah, just a very weird situation, basically. And thanks, Tecmo, maybe. I mean, at least we did get a Ninja Gaiden game on Game Boy.
we forgot to mention the best part of the NES games, which is the sound test.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay. Let's talk about the music a little bit. Let's jump back. And like Ninja Gaiden 2, I think, has the best soundtrack, just in terms of like instrumentation.
That intro song is amazing.
Yeah.
I used it on the last Retronauts, that one up when a guy was punching his couch.
Yes.
I told a story about a guy punching his couch, rather.
However, the first game also had a smart implementation of, like, you know, percussion, like digitized sort of drums.
Yeah, it reminds me of a Konami game.
Yeah, in that way, so.
Another Konami connection.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm sure I've mentioned this on a Retronauts also in the past, but my friends and I used to record like little short radio plays, and the Ninja Gaiden sound test was invaluable because we could, I would write down a list of what tracks to queue up, and I would start playing them and then run over, you know, on screen to the next. To the next tune to get that playing at the right time. Because, of course, you know, it was all recorded to a cassette tape in my bedroom. So we didn't have, you know.
That'll be a bonus
multi-track,
episode, right?
Multi-track. Yeah. Man, I wish I still had those.
Me too.
They vanished.
I did that, but with Street Fighter 2. And I'll tell you, the Wedding March added a lot of comedy to our skits. Because that was in Street Fighter 2 for Ken's ending.
I feel out of it now. I never did anything like that.
But yeah, they had not just the music, but also the sound effects.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, you know, I remember doing, we had to do like some kind of creative project with a myth of like Orpheus and Eurydice or something. I can't remember, but basically someone who commits suicide. So I used like the sound of the sword cutting and killing Ryu's father. And it was perfect. It was great.
Yeah, sounds like it. I mean,
I wish I still had those because they were ridiculous. But the fact that I could use that sound check to do like music synced up, you know, with the performances, the readings that we were doing, and you know, before multi-track recording and digital editing was kind of great.
Yeah, and you know, plus that soundtrack is just great for those sorts of dramatic moments. But anyway, yeah, that was Ninja Gaiden Shadow and our love of the music. And after all of that, some years later, just a few years later, was Ninja Gaiden Trilogy for the Super NES.
Now for Death Valley. There are several rough spots here.
Yeah, that's about right. Ninja Gaiden Trilogy was basically the Super Mario All-Stars treatment of the Ninja Gaiden Trilogy. And I think, like, pretty much the only other NES, Super NES title to really do that with older games, I think.
Yeah.
But it was really half-hearted compared to Super Mario All-Stars.
Yeah, that is the core problem here, because like, they did the bare minimum with everything, especially the graphics. Like, compared to Mario All-Stars, like, or even like Ninja Gaiden 1 on PC Engine, it's basically just they added one or two more colors to every little sprite tile.
Yeah.
And like, oh, now it's 16-bit. Great, thanks, guys.
Technically, it is.
Yeah, yeah, thanks so much. But basically, I mean, you do get Ninja Gaiden 1, 2, and 3, and that should be great on its own. It is fairly competent, but there's also like some extra technical bugs that they added to the whole thing. There's extra slowdown at some points where they wouldn't show up.
Oh, on Super NES.
Yeah. Well, like, it's either like the Super NES should have been able to handle the older game slow down, but instead they add more to it.
That's a feature. It makes things easier.
Yeah.
Just like the tapes where the guy plays it at half speed.
Yeah. They kind of butchered the music. It's a little bit too horn-driven, a bit too farty, I'd say.
It is pretty farty.
Yeah, kind of a problem with other low-quality Super NES compositions. Oh, and also there's no parallax scrolling, so whereas the PC Engine version could barely pull it off, this one doesn't even have it.
That was Super NES's one of its biggest strengths. Yeah. It's like, look at all these layers, dude.
That requires
moving around.
A little effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they really kind of bungled it. I mean, once you start realizing what the problems are, it's like, yeah, I'll just go back to the NES, thanks.
Yeah, I remember being really disappointed when I rented that game because, you know, that was before the concept of being a game collector really existed in my mind, so it was kind of fire and forget. If I wanted a Super NES, I had to sell off my NES.
Yeah.
So, you know, it had been several years since I played NES games. It was right before I discovered emulation. So there was kind of this gulf, and I was like, oh, Ninja Gaiden, those games were great. I'd love to play those again.
Mm-hmm.
So I rented it, and it was, I don't know, I was expecting Super Mario All-Stars, and it was basically just the same games, but a little bit worse.
Yeah.
And so that was a letdown.
Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned quickly earlier, like Tecmo went through a weird period on the Super NES.
What was up with Tecmo?
They were just like devoted to their sports games on this side of the world, and like everything else they were making was just really odd and kind of crappy. Like Secret of the Stars was almost like Ninja Gaiden Trilogy in a way. It was basically just an NES game with a few extra colors added to it.
It was like sub Final Fantasy IV technology, but when Chrono Trigger came out, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Or maybe after Chrono Trigger came out.
About a year before, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, Ninja Gaiden Trilogy, it's more of a disappointment really than an out-and-out tragedy, I would say. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just like there's too many problems to really recommend it.
Yeah.
However, because of Tecmo's weirdness back then, they did not print a lot of them. So it's a rare cartridge if you have it as well.
Keep it in the packaging. You really don't need to open it and play it.
Right, yeah. And, you know, it just adds to the pain that they should have just made a real Ninja Gaiden 4
or something. I'm surprised. I mean, I don't know what their situation was at the time.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right? But didn't work out that way. I suppose maybe the original creators had left or were doing something else at the time.
Mm.
But yeah, after that, Tecmo they had some weird experiences. But that is basically the arcade and Nintendo era of Ninja Gaiden.
Here's a helpful time freeze. Watch for cougars coming from behind.
Okay, well, yeah, let's go.
Cougars coming from behind. That sounds enticing.
That's a whole new meaning now.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I guess that's a good time to take a quick break. And after that, we will talk about more Ninja Gaiden stuff from the realm of Sega? Yes, it's true. Back, it's Retronauts, and we're talking about the Ninja Gaiden series, and we went through the big stuff with Nintendo and the arcade game and all that, but there is a whole new other world of Ninja Gaiden games that some of you may not be all that familiar with, and that was the ones for the Sega systems. So, like, Sega and Tecmo kind of had this weird, fleeting relationship. Like, there were some Tecmo ports on SG-1000, but those weren't by Sega, they were by a company called Solio. Still not by Tecmo themselves, and then
same with Master System also. Solio published those. Rygar and one other game.
Yeah. Or am I mixing it up?
Maybe you are.
Sega did ports on SG-1000, then Solio did Master System stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, the only two games published by a third party for the Sega Mark III in Japan were by Solio, and both of them were Tecmo games.
Yeah.
So I've always wondered if Solio is like some kind of weird shadow corporation spinoff of Tecmo. But who knows?
Yeah. The information is foggy on that one. But Tecmo didn't really publish anything themselves on Sega stuff until the Mega Drive, and like even then it was a lot of sports games that also like Sims ported. Like we mentioned Sims earlier in the show. And so they did some of those sports games ports. But nevertheless, like Sega finally got the license to Ninja Gaiden from Tecmo in the 90s, And so what they did is they just made three separate Ninja Gaidens for three of their systems at the time. Two of them came out.
It's good batting average. Yeah.
But I think it's just weird because like Sega already had their own prominent Ninja game series. They had Shinobi, mm-hmm. and they were still making Shinobi games. But here they go with Ninja Gaiden. It's like, well, now you have the best of both worlds on Sega systems, you know, ideally. So yeah, let's start with the one I think that was released the widest all over the world was Ninja Gaiden for Game Gear.
You must go quickly here to avoid the bazooka fog.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Game Tape. Yeah. I'm probably most familiar with this one, too, because I played it, you know, a few years after it came out. And Ninja Gaiden on Game Gear, it's slightly similar to the NES games, but it's more focused on just, like, running forward and slashing, and not too focused on, like, crazy platforming, necessarily. I mean, you do some the big jumps every now and then, and there's like a stage where you climb up a skyscraper, but that's about it.
Is this the Game Gear or Master System?
Yeah, Game Gear. Hmm. And there are weird bosses too, as well. And some of them, you know, are easy, and some of them get a little progressively harder. But like the game generally is pretty easy. Like the stages are short, and you can just—it's all about just running forward and slashing, and you barely have to think about it a lot of the time. Easy compared to like both the NES Ninja Gaidens and like Sega's own Game Gear Shinobi, which is also like weirdly unfair at times. But so this is like the the watered down version of everything.
The one gentle ninja game.
Yeah, I guess the quick and portable one, you could say. It involves like reclaiming the dragon sword or something like that. I mean, it's not, the plot is not very as involved as the other games, although it does involve Ryu going around the world again, sort of. And so, I mean, it's decent, but it's just really easy, and you could beat it like in an hour or less, a couple hours, I don't know. However, I would say I do really like the music in it. And I think like Sega's 8-bit music is my favorite among 8-bit music. Mm-hmm. So, and this is just really, this sounds really good to me. It sort of matches the stage designs and the visuals really well to me. So, I mean, I'm sort of sentimental about it in that way, but I know it's kind of like the weakest of, you know, these weird Ninja Gaiden games.
I am not familiar with this at all outside of what I watch, but I agree with what you said about the music. It was surprising. You know, I don't normally think about 8-bit Sega music that often because when I think of Sega music, I think of the horrible ways people abuse the Sega's sound, you know, processor.
Oh, yeah.
FM synthesis.
Like, yeah, Genesis. Yeah.
A lot of meow, like stuff like that.
Yeah, yep. You're sort of saved by the limitations here.
Yeah.
With the 8-bit stuff. So, yeah. So they did an alright job, I think. But yeah, it's just a super easy game. And I'm pretty sure that it probably will not be ported to 3DS at this point. No, things have been retconned since then. Same, though, with the Master System Ninja Gaiden.
This is just practice for what's ahead.
Uh-oh. This was released in 1992 for the Master System. This was ported by Sims. I mean, not ported. Actually made from the ground up by Sims, but I'd say ported also because it's spiritually the closest to the NES games out of all of Sega's Ninja Gaiden games.
Yeah, after watching the videos that you sent over, I really want to play this game because it seems like it captured the feel and flow of the Ninja Gaiden games really, really well, even incorporating the overhand climb from Ninja Gaiden 3.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's the same thing, basically. It's a large kind of a large screen action game with very similar graphics, sprite sizes, and like mechanics, and like you said, the climbing and stuff. And so it's definitely the most accomplished, I would say, of like all these Ninja Gaiden clones from Sega. Mm-hmm. But it still kind of feels like an imitation of like the genuine NES games.
I think part of it is because it's so not otherworldly. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing supernatural about it. It's basically... Mm. It takes the Ninja Gaiden thing really seriously.
Right.
And so you're fighting like a sumo wrestler and then you have to rescue someone's geisha daughter.
Yeah.
And then there's the like, Yakuza level.
Yeah, it's like Legend of Kage almost.
It totally feels like Ryu running around in someone else's video game. It's like it's like one of those crossover flash games where you're like, Ryu, what are you doing in, you know, whatever the hell? What game would that be? It would be like one of those Japanese platformers that never got ported over, but it's, you know, kind of one of those second or third tier type things for Famicom.
Like I said, like Legend of Kage or...
Yeah, but it's all modern day Japan.
Yeah, true. Mm.
So it all... It's like really unusual. It's very, very Japanese, mm-hmm. very much about kind of like almost Japanese crime underground culture, but in the modern era.
Yeah.
And you just happen to be a ninja.
Yeah.
Killing everyone.
Yeah, and like, it starts out in like a forest stage, you know, bamboo forest and whatnot, and then it just moves on, yeah, through all the sorts of stages that look familiar if you played the NES games, but yet not. And so, yeah, it's really close, and they did a good job. It's kind of like that vampire game, basically.
But I don't know. It looks better than Vampire to me.
Same sort of, I mean, concept.
Right,
in a way,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same developer, at least, too. So they knew their stuff in that way.
But that was never released in America, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so Japanese, and yet it was never released in Japan. It only was released in Europe, Brazil, and Korea, which, of course, were still big Master System markets at the time.
That explains its release date.
Yeah, that too. And
I'm surprised it didn't come out in Brazil under the guise of some cartoon character I've never heard of, like Quacky McDucks.
Monica's Little Ninja Adventure.
They did that with the simpler games.
Yeah.
I think maybe Ninja Gaiden was a good enough brand that they could bring over. So yeah, if you have a chance, anybody, go ahead and check that out, because it is like really, really close to the NES games, and it's decent enough. They pulled it off.
And the nice thing is that there's no region locking on Master System, so I think European games run a little slow.
Yeah,
but Brazil NTSC or PAL?
I forget.
I'm just wondering if the Brazilian version might just be plug and play with the US system.
If you're in Brazil, count the amount of frames you're seeing on your TV right now. And let us know.
How's the color look, guys?
Yeah. And the third Ninja Gaiden game that Sega made was for the Mega Drive, of course, because that was the big thing at the time. However, it was not released. But
you'll need to arrive here with at least 96 units of spiritual strength and the fire wheel.
Because this one sucks. Strangely enough, though, this is different from the other two in that it's actually a belt scroll beat 'em up like the original arcade game was, which is very odd because it's like everybody knew Ninja Gaiden at this point as, you know, a platformer, NES platformer.
Was Tecmo still the developer on this one?
No.
Okay.
These were all licensed to Sega. And
okay.
They got their own teams, or
we don't know who was
subcontractors
behind
to make it. Yeah. Well, we know for sure that Sims made the Master System one.
Right.
I think some other little company made the Game Gear one. This, I'm not clear on. This Mega Drive one. But yeah, it's basically just like the arcade game. It has whole different levels and everything, and has you know, more of a story. I mean, that's basically the only thing that they put into all of these Sega games that was shared between the Nintendo ones, is that there's a little more focus on plot. There's some cutscenes and stuff. But yeah, this is not that great because that's probably why it was unreleased. Who really knows how far along in development it was, but it's kind of feature complete. However, it looks, sounds, and plays pretty awful.
I never played it, but it must be bad because I feel like the idea of not releasing a game due to quality was sort of a foreign concept in 1992.
Yeah.
You know, just like, just put it out there.
Yeah, but I guess Sega dodged a bullet anyway because this probably would have tarnished a bit of the Ninja Gaiden brand. But yeah, they also brought back the Jason Voorhees guys from the arcade game. Yeah,
did they? I know Splatterhouse eventually had to alter how that character looked. Did they alter this version of Jason Voorhees, or were they just like, we don't care?
It's probably they don't care.
Okay,
probably because they were still working on the Japanese release first.
Yeah.
Maybe they changed it if it came out here? They would have changed it up a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows, really? But yeah, this one is very unremarkable. Unreleased for a reason, no doubt. If you can find the ROM or what have you, like you'll see. But I do think, you know, it was an interesting concept to bring back the beat 'em up formula. But again, it probably wouldn't have really worked out. Again, it was sort of like Shinobi was to Sega. You know, Streets of Rage was also to the beat 'em ups, and so now you have Ninja Gaiden, which is like sort of a combination of those two franchises in a way. Now on Mega Drive, it just probably would not have got much love, I think. But that is basically the world of the Sega Ninja Gaiden games. And like we said before, you know, Game Gear game, pretty all right, but easy, kind of a breeze. Master System, easily the best of this whole bunch. Just because it's very close to the NES game, and they really just pulled it off, like I said. But oh, wait, I forgot. I totally forgot. Back in Ninja Gaiden 3, there was a Lynx port of that. For some stupid reason. None of the other ones except that arcade game. So it was just very odd. And also less helped by the Lynx than the arcade game was, because the resolution was super tiny. Mm. And, you know, Ryu was like, what, 4 pixels tall or something? So everything was really squashed in. And also they switched the jump and attack buttons. You assholes. I can't believe you would do something like that. What are you?
Have you played a video game before, sir?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure the high speed and extremely difficult enemies were made so much easier to fight with the blurry passive matrix LEDs.
So yeah, avoid that one, but just check out the port of the arcade game if you are a Lynx obsessive. Those are all the games that I really want to talk about. However, there are some side things about the Ninja Gaiden / Ryukenden franchise that we could talk about. For one thing, there was an anime OVA released in 91 in Japan. It's the Ninja Gaiden anime, basically.
And, yeah, that was back when the OAV was a viable business model. Extremely high quality animation.
Right.
It was like 40 to 60 minutes long and cost like $80.
Yeah, until, you know, you got stuff like the SNK flood of crap and Toshinden and Tekken. It didn't work out too well. So I think by being on the earlier side of things, the Ninja Gaiden one does not look as bad.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of bad OAVs released, but a lot of really good ones too. I think it was ultimately the move to DVD and the implosion of the Japanese economy in the 90s that that really took the wind out of the OAV model. It was just something that was very unique to that market in the 80s.
Yeah.
Basically, it was, you know, high quality home animation that they sold to people for the same price that you know, most other companies sold VHS tapes to rental.
Yeah.
I guess the American direct-to-video market was different because I was like, here's a cheap Disney sequel that we didn't spend as much time on instead of, you know.
It was the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So direct-to-video was for things that weren't good enough to go in theaters.
Yeah.
Right.
But this is like as far as like the franchise got outside of games, really. I mean, this is like the one outside indicator of its popularity was that they made an anime of it.
Bob, did Ryu ever show up in Captain N?
I
don't think so.
I don't think he did, actually. No. He should have replaced one of those idiots.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they needed some ninja stuff injected into it for sure.
It would have been great if his gimmick was he just didn't talk.
Yeah.
Wait, I also want to, I forgot to point out, I was watching cinema scenes for Ninja Gaiden 1, and it was the first time I had ever seen ... that sort of Japanese, I guess, expression, because I don't see that in any other media, really.
You hadn't played Golgo 13 by that point, then, huh?
I don't think I did, but it's like, I didn't know how to parse that information until, like, I didn't know how to parse that ellipses until much later. I'm like, why are there dots here? I don't get it. Like, it didn't equal silence to me. Sorry, I just wanted to bring that up.
Static.
Sometimes I don't think voice actors know how to interpret it either. In some games, it's like,
It's like more of a Marge Simpson reaction than anything.
Right, yes. Or batteries dying, Krusty the Clown doll. So unfortunately, I haven't really seen the Ninja Ryukenden anime. I know it's on YouTube, and you can find it. You can watch the whole thing if you want, but I did not have enough time to really check it out.
The animation is cool. I have a feeling, like with a lot of OVAs at the time, there's going to be a lot of like ultra violence and like ultra sex popping up out of nowhere. Just be like, you spent money for this. Here's some gore and porn.
I saw part of it a while back, and it's pretty bloody in places, but mostly Ryu is just a real dick. Like, he's unlikable as a protagonist.
So true to the original source.
Man, I don't know. Ryu is mostly just kind of a schmuck in the games. Not so much as like, wow, this guy is legitimately obnoxious and I hate him.
Well, it's taken to the next level, next cinematic level. Now we can explore this character a little further.
It's all on YouTube because all anime is free now.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things that was not released outside Japan, I believe. So, you know,
it was just like, Ryu's rich inner life.
Yeah, and it's not like Tecmo cares, apparently. So, so there's some other Ninja Gaiden stuff we can talk about. Obviously, there was the reboot in the 2000s. Tecmo and Team Ninja brought it back after, you know, they were high on the hog from DOA.
You know, I didn't have an Xbox One ever. Sorry, Xbox Original, Xbox Classic. How do we say that? Okay,
Original Xbox.
What did they keep from Ninja Gaiden? Because, like, superficially, it just seemed like the only thing they took was, like, here's a ninja.
His name's Ryubi Hayabusa.
Because the Dragon Sword.
Right. Ryu was in the DOA demons. Games.
Right. I just didn't know if they kept the supernatural powers or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Okay.
He has magic, and he has crazy moves, and there's also crazy demonic alien-ish enemies as well to fight. But the plot's completely redone. It's all retconned and rebooted. And
yeah, actually, the plot seems more in line with the Master System game.
With
village being destroyed. And
Yes.
I was watching the opening cinema for that. I was like, oh, huh, yep. That's where they got the Xbox reboot.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I was going to mention that, too. Yeah, so that's interesting. Like, they brought back Irene for Ninja Gaiden 2, but of course she's a blonde, huge, busty woman who wears leather.
Come on, Irene.
Yeah. No, boy.
Wow. I was waiting to say that.
Now we're in the Hall of Judgment.
Oh, my God. Don't.
I mean, people do love the new Ninja Gaiden games, except the third one that really got run through the ringer, and they had basically had to remake it so people would like it again.
Fall on their swords
with Rager's Edge. I like it as well, at least the first one. I haven't really played 2 or 3 all that much, but you know, they did keep the legacy of high difficulty in check.
Oh, they did, yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, people brought up other complaints, like the camera was always a menace, you know, to the player. You keep having to swing around stuff and figure out where the enemy is, and the bosses are too fast, and this and that. But it has sustained, and Tecmo has really been treating it as the marquee title that they used to, or maybe even should have. So good for them. Also, there's also Yaiba, Ninja Gaiden Z, which is not about Ryu, but about this bad guy, Yaiba, who runs around doing this. It has this weird comic book style shell shading stuff, and he's very vulgar. So it's one of those games. It's also co-produced by Keiji Inafune's studio.
Right.
So, but developed by the guys who did Lost Planet 3 as well. I forget their name.
Spark,
thank you. I was thinking Sledgehammer. That's not them. That's where Ninja Gaiden is right now, but you know, this is Retronauts, and we were not going to talk about that too much. However, there is another sort of retro-ish game that does take after Ninja Gaiden quite a bit, and I'm sure some of you, at least Jeremy, is familiar with Haggleman 3 from Retro Game Challenge on DS, the Game Center CX game. And I mean, obviously, it looks a lot like Ninja Gaiden, but it doesn't really play too much like it. It's, I don't know. Jeremy, did you want to talk about it a bit?
Well, I like that the Haggleman games kind of draw from all the different Famicom Ninja games, because the first two are very reminiscent of Tecmo's Ninja, which then Jalico redid as.
Oh, it wasn't Tecmo, though, originally. No.
Was it not? Oh, no, sorry, I got Star Force and Star Soldier.
No, that's fine.
Also thinking of,
sorry, okay, so yeah. It's
see, that's how just crazy this got.
Anyway, yeah, so it's reminiscent of Jalico's Ninja Jaja Maru.
Ninja-kun, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But then the third game is very much like kind of a mashup of Ninja Gaiden, a little bit Mega Man.
Yeah.
It just has the feel of that sort of 1991 era Famicom NES game, like when they really had the tech down, they really had the design down. Everyone was kind of ready and champing at the bit to go into 16 bits.
Yeah.
But, you know, the platforms weren't necessarily ready for people to make that big investment yet, so they kept making these really, really extravagant NES games. I feel like Indies Zero, the developer of Retro Game Challenge, really, really just totally nailed it. It's a really fun game.
Yeah, for sure. They really didn't bring it back too much for the sequel, though, which is unfortunate, but we got other good platform games out of it. But yeah, go ahead and check that out if you haven't yet, because it's just fun seeing that sort of progression from the dinky-looking original two Haggleman games to all of a sudden, oh, now in their mythology, now it's a quote-unquote mature, more action-y.
Yeah, doesn't it have multiple characters you can switch through? It's been, you know, right. Since the game first came out, which is 4 years now since I played it, but...
You have Haggleman Lady. That's part of it. Yeah.
So there's no Haggleman game in Game Center CX2?
Not a new one, no. They have it's a special edition of the first one with Komei, the girl. You can play as the girl. That's about it.
All right.
So, yeah.
I still need to pick that up when I'm in Japan next time.
Yeah, there's no real sequels to all those previous games in the sequel.
I thought Guardia Quest had a
sequel. Guardia Quest. Yeah. Excuse me. That's it, though. That brings us to the end of this whole thing, basically. And
So you did forget about one thing.
Fudge.
Oh man,
which was the Worlds of Power.
Now you're in the Hall of Judgment.
Ninja Gaiden.
Okay.
Ninja Gaiden escaped video game media and became books. The World of Power book.
Oh boy.
You're
right.
That was kind of the unusual entry in the Worlds of Power, because it was really directly based on the game story, I guess, because unlike Mega Man 2 or Castlevania 2, Ninja Gaiden actually had a lot of stories, so they pretty much just transcribed it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And here I was talking about the anime, saying that was the only real outward media representation here. Yeah, I forgot all about Worlds of Power.
I'm sure there are Japanese collectors that just covet the hell out of those books. They're like,
Wow,
Ninja Ryukenden got a book in America. It's got to be great.
Yeah,
And it's probably written at a simple enough level that most Japanese can read it,
right,
even if they didn't take a lot of English classes.
It's a light novel. Yeah, okay. Point taken. Thank you, Jeremy.
My pleasure. I knew I was here for a reason.
All right, then. Is there anything else that we should mention about Ninja Gun? We kind of flew over the series and checked out the Sega side of the world. And yeah, it's generally a very, very well-regarded series, and I think it earns its classic status. Of course, there were some rough spots, but, you know, that's the same with all the classic series that we've always talked about on the show and outside of it. So yeah.
They're charm points.
Oh, yes, thank you. It works, too. Yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening. Bob, you've been sort of the go-to plugs guy.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do that.
Sorry. I don't know if that's... was that passive-aggressive? I can't tell.
No, I liked it. I liked it.
Well, I mean, just for Retronauts stuff in general?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Role. Please go to Retronauts.com, comment on our episode, you know, posts, let us know how we're doing. By the time you listen to this, we'll also be on iTunes, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So leave us a review. Give us how many stars you want, but I think you know how many stars we deserve. And that's 5.
Yes.
We're also on SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter. Look us up, Retronauts, on all of those if you want to stay in touch with us, ask us questions, find out when we're doing live streams. I've been doing quite a few live streams. I'm sure the other guys are going to be starting up soon, too.
That's true. Hopefully, by the time you heard this, I will have started doing Game Boy games. I like to call it Monochrome Monday.
I like Mondays now.
I need to figure out what I'm going to do.
And also, I've been appearing on other podcasts in the area to talk about Retronauts and other things, too. If you go to Laser Time Podcast and VG Empire, I'm on 2 episodes of Laser Time, 1 on VG Empire. They'll all be out by the time you listen to this. And yep. I want to thank Chris Antista, Brett Elston, and Henry Gilbert for having me on. And they'll probably be here at some point. So if you like those guys, you're in luck.
Yeah, I know I do. So yeah, you and I are at least fans of them. So.
They're good people.
Yeah. And
I'm not a fan.
Well, that's fine. There's potential. So personal Twitters, I am RDBAAA, Bob.
I am Bob Servo.
And Jeremy.
Game Spite.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, once again. And thank you, Jeremy and Bob. And that has been the Ninja Gaiden Saga so far. This has been Retronauts, and we will see you next time for Retronauts Pocket. Thank you, and goodbye.
Now, as for how the story ends, well, we'll just let you discover that.